Good morning. Can we settle down, please? Are we settled up? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, captains of industry, DG of Energy, Department Staff of Energy, NERSA, who have we got here, Chair? Sophia, I've seen my state of engine, Shell, Chevron, who are these other people? But we will have a chance of introducing ourselves. My name is Freddie Adams. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic Development, which deals with economic development in the National Council of Provinces, as well as mineral resources and energy. On my left-hand side, next to me, is our gracious, honorable, excellency, chairperson, Elizabeth, excellency, honorable member, Elizabeth Tabete, chairperson of Energy Department, not Energy Department, of Energy, Portfolio Committee on Energy. ladies and gentlemen, the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee has jointly decided to call this public hearing because we are one parliament, although we have two houses, but we are one parliament and we want to streamline the work. Thank you, Honorable Chair, for the wisdom and the foresight that you had so that we can get this industry, which is not much transformed, into the right direction. I will now ask members to introduce themselves as we go along. Just say your name and surname. Leave the birth date and the ID and how long you married, if you're divorced, or what's the status, divorced, single, or that. Leave that for another day, we'll get to that. Just the name and surname, and from which province you are. Like I said, I'm Freddie Adams, I'm representing the Western Cape. I'm a permanent delegate in the National Council of Provinces from the Western Cape. Let's start here with honorable member.
Well, vito la ga ke nna Mokone Maina, ke tswa kwa North West.
Oh, Bulelwa Thinto, ANC, not married. thank you, Chair. Nomvula Matshibela, member of ENIT from Limpopo.
Aaron Mgwene, Free State.
Morning, Chairperson. My name is Sarah Lekhale. I'm representing Limpopo. I'm happily married.
Good morning, Evan.
Philip Dexter, member of the Portfolio Committee, and I only have one wife. Susan Jigalana, member of the Portfolio Committee for Energy.
Honorable Dexter, just switch off your mic, please. We don't want to hear the private conversations that you're having.
No, it's a public meeting. Everything has full disclosure.
Honorable members, are we done with the introduction? Honorable Linda Moss.
Thank you very much, Chair President. My name is Linda Moss. I am the member of the Portfolio Committee. I'm actually from the Western Cape, and I'm a member of the ANC. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair President, ladies and gentlemen. David Ross, member of the Portfolio Committee of Energy, Free State. Thank you.
Now, please, KZN. Jomonya Bempumala. Kenneth Sinclair, NCOP, Northern Cape.
Tumzan Kamete from Wazulu Natal.
Are there more members?
Morning, Chair. It's Sherry Chen from Harkin.
You can just go down the line. Mike Stead, start from you.
Mike Stead from Engen.
Ivan Collier from Shell.
Graham Yeager from Chevron.
Peter Sabuena from Chevron.
Tebo Mutevera from NASA.
Zefu McKenzie from NASA.
Ambassador Liketi Energy.
Sidiso Makubela, Department of Energy.
Department of Energy.
Zingisa Mavuso from Department of Energy.
Simona Mokoena, National Energy Regulator, South Africa.
Adrian Kogut, NASA.
Bunang Mohali, Shell Oil, South Africa.
Alapana Chiflaro, South African Petroleum Industry Association.
Nati Mapanga, Engen, Western Cape. See, we were talking to
Tommy De Villiers, members of public.
Carl Carlson, PNG.
So, Lynn van Wyk, Lambo Vierplan.
Arthur Berger, Lambo Vierplan.
Donald Presley, Business Report, getting married.
Good, Donald, that's good.
Ricky Bigfoot, Transnet.
Jabulela Tradu Mapoma, Transnet.
Philip Defeater, Transnet.
Sydney Pepu, Parliament.
Winston Williams from Netix.
Lebombete, Black Petroleum Institute.
Petra Cersei, Transnet.
Belia Bokabo, Department of Energy.
Right.
Mashlang, Research Parliament.
Chris, can you still look coming to?
Pilot Goebel, coming to.
I'm not sure, but I'm Miss or Mrs. It depends
with
the situation.
Today you're Mrs. Okay, we'll respect that. The gentleman, the honourable member that has just walked in, before you get into conversation there, just introduce yourself.
Sorry, Chair, good morning. My name is Jamutapo Mutau. Energy Portfolio Committee. Province, Gauteng.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know, why we are doing this is that we don't want to hear tomorrow or read in the newspaper or Lando Vierkblad, a betrobare bron or an informed source has told us. So now you know everybody, so, and you can say that this one says that and that one says that. Welcome, and let's hope for a fruitful day, and we're going to have a good working day, and relax, that's all. If you've got nothing to hide, relax. If you've got something to hide, relax as well. In everything you do, relax. I hand over to my co-chair, Mrs. Tabete, to take us further through the program.
Well, thank you very much, co-chair. Just to explain a few matters or housekeeping, we've also extended the invitation to the Transport Committee and Public Enterprise because the issues are also part of those that they normally deal with. So it's not only the Energy and the Select Committee, but also the two committees have been invited. We've got two apologies that are written that are before us. Minister of Energy, given the apology, he's dealing with the EU Partnership Conference in Vienna, Austria, and also the chair of NEPSA, Mrs. Cecilia Kuzayo is attending to some GEPF meeting. We like using the abbreviations in South Africa. She's attending that meeting. So these are the two written apologies, official thing that they'll be accepted. Otherwise, all the members that are not here, I hope they'll be joining us. Are the two apologies accepted, members?
Yeah.
I can say yes, all of you. Material?
Accepted, thank you, sir.
All right. We have to start now with the deliberations on the public hearings. I'm sure we all of us know that the liquid fuel charter was one of the charters that were accepted or agreed upon, but it is the mother or father of all the charters. That was the first one to be dealt with, then the others then followed. And 10 years down the line, we felt befitting to hold this hearing between the two committees, but also other two that are invited for, to make sure that we can then deal with the question of implementation so far. And thereafter, we'll then have to determine whether we need any amendments, either legislation-wise or the charter itself, so that then they're able to take forward is the objective of that particular charter at the time and now, but also are there any unintended consequences that then happened after that, or what is it that then we have to do as the parliamentarians as we conduct oversight work. We hope that we'll have successful hearings and we'll be able then to deal with this matter with openness, frank, and et cetera. And we please hope that we have the necessary cooperation from those that we invited to do presentations. We then asked to amend the agenda a little bit with consultation that will start with the Department of Energy. And then instead of SAPIA, we then have the National Energy Regulator. And then after that, then we'll go as per the sequence, starting with SAPIA and all the listed business formations that are on the agenda. And through communication from the Secretariat, we were asked that whether can't we have one presentation of SAPIA, which is the South African Petroleum Industry Association, and all the others will then be ready to answer questions. The answer was given to that request that, please, with due respect, we would like to have individual companies then presenting to us. Because that won't assist us if you only take the SAPIA presentation and say, no, let's ask questions on all of you in terms of what you did. So we hope that has been communicated and we'll be able then to deal with that matter as proposed by the two committees and the other two that we invited for. That will give us fair and justice to the matter, and we hope that it is not a heavy request. It is a humble request to make sure that we can make our work much more easier. So we hope that we will then take that route and be able then to move forward in that spirit, capturing the spirit of the 2010 unity. We want to create that unity and not create unnecessary tension where it doesn't exist. So we hope that that has reached your offices by late yesterday. We'll be able then to cooperate. We've also had the apology, though, is verbal from SAPIA, that the chairperson is not well, and hence then they're represented by Mr. Bona Mohali. I hope you have not changed the Senate. No, men also change the Senate. So we'll be able then to get that input from yourself, and then we'll have them to move on. I think with no further ado, we have then to give to the Department of Energy to give us the update in terms of the charter so far. What is here? form of assessment or reports or what is it that you can take as these committees so that they're able to move forward. Not sure whether the DG is the one who opens or delegated powers, whatever, I don't know. But I think I'll hand over to the DG. And, yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Energy and the Chairperson of the Senate Committee in Economic Development. We'd like to thank you for this opportunity to be able to come and present here in Parliament and also to provide an assessment as we do this today. And we firmly believe that this is going to be a kind of a game changer in the economic transformation of the liquid fuel industry. And as you are all aware, we have had quite a number of challenges with regards to the transformation of any industry in this sector, and we are hoping that this is going to provide an impetus to come up with new ways of ensuring that transformation does take place. And we only can be emboldened by Parliament support on whatever proposals that we make in this regard. The comprehensive audit that is going to take place towards the end of this year is going to provide a picture of what is it that needs to be done, what changes that we need to make if we need to, but also it will provide us with valuable lessons on how to make certain commitments going forward. So without further ado, Chairperson, I will request my colleague, Mr. Mavuso, to make a presentation.
Thank you, DG. It gives me great pleasure to have been given this honor to address this gathering today. Today is exactly 9 months and 45 days before we reach the 10-year since the charter was signed. I think a 10-year period gives us enough time to take a step back and look at the progress with the aim to bolster our efforts. Chair, I've also been privileged to work in an office which was fully established to implement the charter and to monitor progress. So what you will hear from me today is an inside story. It's not a story of someone there at the back room. It's a story from a participant observer. And I think, Chair, the catchphrase here should run through this process is the one of collective responsibility to look at areas where we had fallen behind and even address issues that were not really understood when we took this journey. I will approach my presentation, Chair, by starting on giving a perspective from the eyes of the industry, what exists in the last annual report from the industry, what their view is of what has been achieved. And I'll follow that with the department's perspective in terms of the pillars that the industry has covered in terms of transformation. And then the third area of this presentation would be since licensing is a tool through which transformation has been effected, we will give and identify issues that we think are structural in nature, which have to be addressed if we are going to achieve the transformation that we are talking about. And then lastly, I'll then give a way forward, which is basically a combination of suggestions and question marks. To remind ourselves, Chair, of the Liquid Fuel Charter, the policy objective stated in the Energy Policy White Paper is to achieve sustainable presence, ownership, or control by historically disadvantaged South Africans, a quarter of all faces in the liquid fuel industry. All plans to achieve this and to bring about a transformation in the industry, which is basically 25%. As it were. Chair, the I will start in terms of the pillars that we have identified. We've identified about four pillars which we think would give us a better picture of what has been achieved. And the details that I'll be giving here are details that it is the perspective, as I said, of the industry. In terms of ownership, prior to November 2000, the HDSA participation was at the level of 5.8. And as we stand right now, the view from the industry is that ownership or equity is around 26%. In terms of management and control, black board representation is about 36%. Black executive management is at 41%. Black women board member representation is at 11%. No woman CEO or MD. In terms of procurement, the industry sources tell us that prior to November 2000, the percentage share of procurement spent by oil companies on HDSA suppliers was 1.9. And right now we are at 42%. If you go to black, the total black representation in employment, it is at 70%, which will also include top management 32, senior management 37, specialists, and mid management 55%. As I said, this is the view of the industry. So the question is this progress? Is it talking to the issues or the aims and objectives that we have set ourselves? In answering this question, Chair, we'll have to do some headcount and on the four pillars and give a perspective as far as the department is concerned. We are of the view, Chair, that significant progress has been made in terms of equity if the period prior to November 2000 is considered. However, shareholding is not uniformly spread across the value chain and total assets. For example, some of the deals will just be concentrated on one segment of the value chain. And deals concentrated on particular areas of the value chain, excluding certain activities. For example, there are very few or no deals that talk to storage and facilities. And also, Chair, we have we have noticed that there's a loose link between shareholding and the operational value add by HDSA. And the question is equity an easy option? We've also had problems in terms of getting information as far as the take-up of shares by HDSA in some empowerment deals. And this is because these are not included in the annual reports of the oil majors. I think this is an area that the oil companies affected would have to address today. Management control, we said, 36% at board level and 41% at top management level. However, Chair, if you remove PetroSA, which is the national oil company, which has about 10 board members, all of them black, the international oil company picture will tend to be different. Secondly, at the time of the report that we are using, PetroSA had about 7 blacks in top management, including the chief economist and company secretary. So our view, Chair, is that the 36% and 41% on board in top management cannot be the true picture. This means that for us to get the true picture, we have to remove the national oil company from the equation. And these are some of the things that the audit that was mentioned by the Director General will look at. On procurement, there's a claim that oil companies spend about 42% of their money on HDSA companies in terms of goods and services. But we also notice, Chair, that 70% of procurement by oil companies is on crude oil, and less than 10 HDSAs or PE companies are in crude trading. So that means that number of 42% cannot be the correct one. And the determination that we've made is that this procurement spend, if you put crude trading into the equation, would be around 10% or even less. There's an area, Chair and Committee, that has not been addressed sufficiently, or it is not quite clear how it has been addressed, which is skills development. This area is very important because the information that we have, and it has been confirmed by the industry itself, that most of the skilled personnel are fast approaching their retirement age. So skills development is an area that we need particular attention. So in conclusion, as far as the four pillars are concerned, is that the empowerment journey is a mixed bag. Significant strides have been made in some areas, but there's a lack of depth and the magnitude in empowerment deals. Women participation, procurement, and enterprise development lag far behind. I think the oil companies will have ample opportunity to debunk this assertion if they are of the view that this is not the accurate picture. So we, you know, are trying to avoid giving a bad picture or you know, of what has happened in the last 10 years. We have noted that there have been some successful stories as far as PEE concern. For example, if anyone has been paying particular attention, the Reatile Gas, a new company, has merged with Engine Petroleum on a 55% and 45% equity. This deal is LPG market focused, and I think it gives this company an important footprint into the LPG market, and a market that we think, as far as fuel and petroleum is concerned, has the potential to grow in the next few years. Sasol also shares really, you know, embarked on a very commendable journey where they have a dedicated crude trading program to the point that they already have about 7 crude traders from the HDSA OBE stable. Yesterday, I was told that there's an 8th one that is just coming into the fold. We've also, Chair, you know, noticed with great excitement that Shell's empowerment deal with Teve has been extended to manufacturing, which means 50% ownership in Cyprus. Also, Chevron is in the process of selling its wholesale business, and there's a huge HDSA take-up. I think already, the business is divided into provinces, and I know about 3 of the provinces have gone, the wholesale business of Chevron has already gone to 3 HDSA companies. And also, Chair, in this midst of things that are happening, there are a couple of HDSAs that are emerging as significant players in the fuel market, notably Kalula Petroleum, Chemicals, Fuel Logic, Kwande and Makwande. There are others. So there might be other developments that have happened, which I think could be regarded as success stories, but the list that I had here was not exhaustive. Number 5, Chair, I would just like to give an observation from a licensing perspective. This is my favorite area because this is what I do on an everyday basis. Licensing dispensation, as provided by the PTA, is a tool through which a transformation of the industry is affected and monitored. It was operationalized in 2006. Approximately, we have about 15,500 applications to date. This is a cumulative number, which is even, for example, a service station, if it has changed about four times in the last 10 years, then you'd have four applications for that one. So that 15,000 talks about the cumulative number. But that translates into, as far as our system is concerned, to 6,000 retailers. We include the general dealers and unbranded sites. I know industry will tell you that we have about 4,000 service stations in South Africa. Those, the ones that they are not included, they are ones that you find in the rural areas that are not branded, where you don't see a Sasol sign, you don't see a Caltech sign, or where you don't see a BP one, the general dealers. But here I would like you to mark this one. 60% of service stations are in the Gauteng area. We have about 460 wholesalers, and 30 of them are ACSA operators with the right to import products. So far, we have had about 22 manufacturing, blending, and biofuel facilities. Four of them qualify as ACSA. Unfortunately, one of them has not been able to pass that hurdle of the investment decision, you know, the biofuel plant that was going to be erected in Kuha, other than PetroSA. There was a biofuel project that was set for the Kuha project. It doesn't seem that it is going to go on after all. In terms of the retail, the HDSA, the PE, they are 37% of the retail service stations are 100% HDSA owned, which is, we only consider those service stations that are 100% owned. There are other degrees of ownership, which from 100 up to maybe 10%, those we have included. But here we're talking about those service stations that are 100% owned. And this percentage significantly varies from province to province, with some provinces lower than the average. For example, the Western Cape, out of 903 service stations, only 26% of them are 100% HDSA owned. Chair, a large number of these 37% that you are talking about are relegated to sites that are survivalist in nature, and few sites that pump high volumes, including those ones that you find on the freeways. We are of the view that the service stations that pump, that are very profitable, and some of them you find in the freeways, they are we have very low HDSA or BE participation there. For a service station to have a return, you would have to at least pump something above 300,000 liters of petroleum product a month. We've also, Chair, using our own devices, we are of the view that the retail market is overtraded and saturated, especially if you're going to take the rate of change of hands of service station ownership and the number of new to industry service stations. The ownership, as far as service stations are concerned, is changing at a very high rate, which is the ones that are already existing. And in terms of business, if you identify that particular pattern, then there's something wrong in the industry. And you know, from where I'm sitting, it will say there are market forces that are actually forcing people to sell, meaning that they are not doing well. And also, you look at the service stations that come, these very new, built from scratch service stations that come in a year. We have less than 20 of them on average a year. So that means there's something wrong with the market. So, for example, in a year we would have approximately about 1,300 new service stations, I mean new applications, and 90% of them is change of hands, change of ownership. Chair, I would also like you to, and the committee to just take this and take a step back. If we say 60% of the service stations are in Gauteng, then that means there are serious empowerment challenges in retail as far as other provinces are concerned, meaning that the cake in the other provinces is small. We do also have a problem with the definition of the beneficiaries when we say HDSAs, because we have seen a trend where, for example, when people have to comply, instead of making a meaningful contribution to empowerment, they would just transfer the assets to the female members of the family, because those female members of the family do qualify under what we call HDSA. It's something that we need to think about. We have about, in our system, we have about 30 HDSA wholesalers licensed and have the right to import products. However, there's a very low import permit usage within this group. And some of the people that we have licensed as far as wholesale is concerned have never traded. And in our investigation, only about 11 HDSAs have used the permit, and even those ones a very few times. We have no known HDSA bringing or importing product into the Durban port for market supply, meaning that the ones that normally use the Durban facilities are the ones that are embedded with the oil majors, meaning that it's a transaction that goes straight to the oil major. So I think there's a problem there if HDSAs can only access the port facilities if they are doing business with the oil majors. We will have a problem and a challenge in terms of creating independent HDSA wholesalers. Hence, most of the HDSAs use the Mozambican and the South African border to bring product, which is overland transportation, which is the most expensive form of transportation as far as fuel is concerned. We do also have problems here with entrenched industry relations. We have reports that there are non-HDSAs and sometimes unlicensed wholesalers getting business, and these people are squeezing out the legitimate players. So the problems as far as the HDSAs are concerned relate to the access to petroleum infrastructure, limited access to storage facilities, and most importantly, HDSA wholesalers also compete directly with the marketing arms of oil companies. If, for example, as an HDSA wholesaler, I need a certain volume of petroleum products and I go to Sasol, BP, I still have to compete with the BP, the in-house BP wholesaler. And so that is the problem. And as I had mentioned, out of the 7 oil majors, as far as we are concerned, only one of them has a dedicated program for HDSA crude traders. And most dedicated funding available for HDSA is in the retail segment as opposed to wholesale. I know the National Empowerment Fund has started something on funding HDSA wholesalers, but that is very recent. So by and large, the picture that we have the HDSA operators number is growing. Some have made great strides. But if you look at the volume that they trade as a percentage of the total industry is around 0.5. What is the way forward? We are of the view that We need to amend the Petroleum Products Act and the Charter to increase HDSA and BEE participation. For example, we could have volume set aside for HDSA wholesalers to mitigate against direct competition, to say from a certain volume to a certain volume, this is an area where only HDSAs can trade. We could restrict all companies' imports on refined products to their nameplate or put a quota. For example, if a refinery produces an equivalent of 180,000 barrels per day, if it needs more product than that because of the market demand, then you would say give that opportunity to an HDSA company. Can we do that? That is a question mark. And there is, Chair, state agencies that have significant fuel input to their operations. For example, Eskom. Eskom uses a lot of fuel. Do they consider HDSAs or BEE suppliers? We need to know. And if not, they need to come to the party. Is it possible for us to have an allocation at the Devon port for HDSAs where they can use the facilities to bring in products? We'll have a new pipeline soon. Can we do an allocation there that a certain percentage of that pipeline needs to be used by the HDSAs? Most importantly, as far as these proposals are concerned, there needs to be an alignment between the Department of Energy, NERSA, Transnet, and the National Ports Authority on empowerment. Issues that have been raised with us, which is the Department of Energy, are issues that are not in our immediate mandate. So alignment with other state agencies as far as empowerment is concerned is a must. So if you can do about six of the things that I was talking about just in the last minute, I think we could create then a niche opportunity for the HDSA. Chair, I'm proposing, the Department of Energy is proposing, that could be made a measured procurement for all companies. For example, if you are talking about, you are saying 10% of your procurement spend or whatever percentage has gone to the HDSA, we need to know how much of that related to crude oil trading. Because if you don't, you would never be able to get the true picture. Can we have incubator-related incentives to say, if all companies have incubator programs for HDSAs, either retail or wholesale, they will get certain tax incentives? So with all this, we think the, as a department, we will go down to the details when we finish the audit, and which will be followed by a review. There have been some calls from industry players that the charter needs to be aligned to the BEE code. Our main concern, Chair, is that we need to have an effective transformation framework. And any initiative as far as the department is concerned that will take us closer or to what we are talking about would be fine with us. Or do we continue with a sector-specific charter with stronger monitoring and enforcement legislative tip? So I would like you to take you to something that probably most of us have not realized, that the current licensing regime was only operationalized in 2006, 6 years after the charter had been signed. And this has been a challenge. And the Act, as far as the Act is concerned, it regarded all those that have been operating at the commencement of the of its commencement has been license holder, giving them the right to operate. So when we started with the licensing regime, 70% of the operators were deemed license holders. All that they needed to do was to give us plans to comply, which would be now looked at, like starting from November 2010. So that has been a challenge. That is why, for example, there has not been probably an effective tracking and monitoring mechanism. For example, one of the challenges that we had when we operationalized the licensing system, we found that service stations now are not owned by individuals anymore. To a great extent, they are being owned by companies, CCs, those kind of business arrangements. But what we did, we would say, when you have three or more service stations, then you'd have to comply. The reason why we used the three or more, we went back, an example that was used by within the BEE framework, that companies that have a turnover of more than 5 million, then those are the ones that would have to comply with the BEE code. Then what we did, when we calculated, we found that at least someone who owns about three service stations and above, then we can actually effect. Those are the kind of people that make that money that is talked about as far as the BEE. So these are kind of things that we have initiated to try and track the progress as far as compliance is concerned. With those words, Chair, I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mavuso. Our second presentation is from National Energy Regulator of South Africa, NERSA. Yeah. Members, please note all your concerns. After NERSA, we will go to questions, discussions, and responses. Oh, sorry. After Safia, we'll go to questions, discussions, and responses. Mr. Mokoena, are you ready to roll the dice?
Yes, Chairperson. Chairperson of the Select Committee and on Economic Development and the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Energy, honorable members of Parliament, both the Assembly and the NCOP. She allow me to also recognize the DG, Ms. Makubani, and her entourage, representatives of the oil industry. Ladies and gentlemen, Chair, in addition to the apology that you received from Mrs. Kuzu, I would like to also apologize for Dr. Compton, who's on international business in Canada. Accompanying me, Chair, it's Adrian Cogill, the acting Executive Manager for Petroleum Pipelines, Thabo Ramanamane, the Head of Department for Licensing and Infrastructure Planning, Debua Mutebele, the Petroleum Pipelines Specialist, Charles Sebela, our Communications and Stakeholder Manager, and Zeta McKenzie, the Senior Manager in the Office of the CEO. Chair, I'll take you through the presentation as follows. I will outline the roles and responsibilities insofar as we are concerned, the relevant act, which we may have concurrent jurisdiction, third-party access, provisions of the charter that are relevant to us, NERSA licensing processes, storage license granted, issues raised by the historically disadvantaged South Africans, the challenge that we see, and we will then conclude. Chair, in terms of roles
roles and responsibilities, just in brief, as we know. Maybe perhaps I should start that this August House is part of the Parliament, makes legislation. The Minister is responsible for policy making. And we as the National Energy Regulator are responsible for administering the Petroleum Pipelines Act. On the other hand, the department is responsible for the administration of the Petroleum Products Act. Now, in terms of the liquid charter, the charter has been incorporated into the Petroleum Products Act in accordance with the Petroleum Products Amendment Act of 2003. Since the Department of Energy is responsible for administering this act, it is also administering the enforcement of the charter. In terms of Section 2 of the Petroleum Products Act, in considering license application, in terms of this act, the controller of petroleum products shall promote the advancement of historically disadvantaged South Africans and give effect to the charter. In addition, the controller of Petroleum Products Act may require any category of license holder to furnish information as prescribed in respect of the implementation of the charter. Now, in terms of the Pipelines Act, NERSA regulates the petroleum pipeline industry in accordance with that act, read together with the National Energy Regulator, which establishes the NERSA. The Petroleum Pipelines Act gives NERSA the following powers: to license the construction, operation, and conversion of petroleum pipelines, storage facilities, and loading facilities; gathering and storing of information relating to these activities; undertaking investigations into these activities; and setting and approving tariffs in a manner prescribed. The Petroleum Pipelines Act is one of the objects, the promotion of companies in the petroleum pipelines industry that are owned and controlled by historically disadvantaged South Africans by means of license conditions to enable them to become competitive. The Petroleum Pipelines Act empowers NERSA to, when issuing licenses, impose license conditions to promote the HDSAs in the industry. However, NERSA can only do this in a manner that is prescribed by the Minister of Energy in regulation. The Minister published regulations in terms of the Petroleum Pipelines Act in 2008. In terms of this regulation, applicants for licenses and existing licensees must annually, on the anniversary of their license, submit information regarding commercial arrangements made for the participation of HDSAs in the activities. Information to be submitted must include the following information regarding the HDAs: shareholding, directorship, management, procurement, compliance with the Employment Equity Act, and plans and actions taken for development of HDSAs. In addition, Regulation 8.2 instructs NERSA to use the information gathered in such a manner so as to facilitate ownership, control, or management of operations of petroleum pipelines, storage facilities, and loading facilities. In the legislation, third-party access to storage infrastructure is governed by Section 20.21N of the Petroleum Pipelines Act and by Regulation 6. Section 21N requires that facility owners must allow third-party access to uncommitted capacity in their licensed storage facilities. Regulation 6 requires storage licensees to submit to NERSA the mechanism by which they will allocate this capacity to third parties. the regulation also requires the licensee to publish the mechanism and make it available to prospective users of their facility. In the charter, there are two provisions related to the use and ownership of infrastructure. One provision acknowledges that access to large infrastructure for the movement and storage of crude oil and petroleum products is acknowledged as critical in the supply chain of emerging companies. In this regard, owners of such facilities will provide third parties with non-discriminatory access to uncommitted capacity. In this acknowledgement, the charter is aligned with the Petroleum Pipelines Act. The charter further commits the signatories to create fair opportunities to entry to the retail network, which would include storage facilities. Just a brief overview of our NERSA licensing responsibilities. The licensing rules made by NERSA require applicants for licenses to include in their applications information prescribed by regulations. In terms of decision making, the information submitted by applicants is considered by NERSA when making a decision regarding the granting of any license. License conditions. Once a decision to grant a license has been made, licensees are required as a condition of their license to comply with the Petroleum Pipelines Regulations by annually submitting regarding commercial arrangement made by the participation of HDSAs in their activities. Now, with regard to access to joint facilities, relating to loading and pipelines, the petroleum pipelines requires proportional access by all according to needs. Thus, there are no major issues in this particular area. The challenge is that practically loading facilities and pipelines cannot be used if one does not have access to storage facilities. There are 28 storage facilities connected to the Transnet pipeline, the pipeline from Durban to Johannesburg, the so-called DJP, and 27 of them are owned by oil majors, and one facility is owned by Transnet Pipeline. Now, Chair, just to characterize the issues that we have come to appreciate coming from HDSA since the establishment of NERSA. First of all, let's discuss access to joint facilities. For storage facilities, the Pipelines Act defines uncommitted capacity as capacity determined by NERSA that is not required to meet contractual obligations. Regulation 6 requires that storage licensees submit to NERSA their capacity allocation mechanism. The allocation mechanism must be commercially and operationally reasonable and non-discriminatory. Now, the HDSAs complain that the oil companies say there is no uncommitted capacity at their storage facilities. This has proven difficult to prove. The oil companies have amongst themselves contracts for reciprocated use of each other's storage facilities, and this may limit the uncommitted capacity available. In terms of ownership of facilities, that is loading and pipelines, no HDSA owns any petroleum loading facility or pipeline. At a recent NERSA hearing on the granting of a license to construct and operate loading facilities on the 6 at Island View, Devon, an HDSA organization objected on the grounds that its members had applied for the use of the same berth and were not responded to by the port authority. They wanted ownership and or control of the new facility. The port authority had not followed proper procedure in granting the oil companies access to the facility. NERSA granted the license since the issues raised by the HDSA were not within the jurisdiction of NERSA. Now, issues relating to storage. All HDSA or small wholesaler-owned facilities are standalone and are not connected to any import loading facilities or power plants. Statements from the HDSA suggest that the oil companies have closed down a number of facilities to rationalize operations, including 23 that were connected to the Transnet pipeline. HDSA complained that the oil companies are not prepared to sell them any of the closed storage facilities. Regarding retailing and wholesaling, two workshops were with the industry and HDSA wholesalers regarding the creation of a fair opportunity for the entry of HDSA into the industry. HDSA made common statements to the effect that conducive relationship between an HDSA and the oil companies are necessary for access to products and infrastructure and for the HDSA to gain entry into the market. Now, the challenges as we see them as NERSA. As indicated, NERSA has no power to enforce compliance with the liquid fuels per se. NERSA's powers are limited to the collection and storing of information relating to the participation of HDSA in the activities it regulates. This power can only be exercised against entities that have been issued with licenses. In terms of Section 25 of the Petroleum Pipelines Act, NERSA can sit as a tribunal and impose fines only on licensees who contravene the Act and their license conditions. NERSA has, through the years, discovered that applicants find it difficult to comply with legislative requirements for licensing, particularly with regards to the provision of information. For example, documentary proof of ownership of facilities to be licensed has been the biggest issue. This has caused delays in licensing the facilities. Consequently, the main focus for NERSA has in the past years been in licensing in order to ensure that all facilities that are in terms of the Petroleum Pipelines Act must be licensed are indeed licensed. Now, the other challenge here is the land alignment that we see in the HDSA instrument, particularly the Triple DEE Act and the Code, the Port Authority's rules, Liquid Fuels Charter and the Petroleum Pipelines Act, and regulation. They are small areas but significant areas that are not aligned in these instruments that we are active in. For example, in the case of the loading facilities constructed on the 6th, the Port Authority has, as a condition of allowing the use of the land, required the applicant to seek a BEE partner within 3 years or so. If the applicant fails to obtain a suitable partner within the period, the applicant is exempt from the requirement for some 5 years or so. This is in contrast with the requirements of the charter, as an example. In conclusion, Chair, it should be reiterated that NERSA is presently not empowered by its legislation to enforce compliance with the charter. However, NERSA has, as its decision-making process, made attempts to promote the participation of the HDSAs in the activities it licenses. Secondly, the powers that NERSA does have to promote participation of HDSAs in the petroleum pipeline industry are limited to information gathering. Although the Act allows NERSA to impose license conditions that would promote HDSAs participation in the industry, this power is curtailed by the regulation. Even if NERSA were to be given more regulatory powers in this respect, harmonization of all the HDSA's related instruments would have to happen in order to reduce regulatory burden. I thank you, Chair, for your attention.
Thank you, CEO. Can we then move to Safia, which is the last one, then I think it will be time for questions. But Mr. Mohali, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It looks like the Executive Director, Mr. Fani Chifularo, is loading the presentation. We had sent it earlier by email to the joint chairpersons, and I will simply say all protocol observed for the interest of time. When I was requested to come and represent the South African Petroleum Industry Association, SAPIA, I was already on my way here to come and represent Shell as the chairman of Shell Oil Products Africa. So I did request in writing that I will wear both hats. Mr. Maurice Khadebe, because of ill health, could not be here, and I myself had a permanent upper respiratory tract infection for which I'm taking antibiotics, so I apologize for my sexy voice. No, thank you. So the request was, I will make a very short presentation on the industry perspective for the 7 members of SAPIA, the chairmanship of which rotates every year amongst the 7, including the National Oil Company, Petro SA. Immediately thereafter, for the interest of effectiveness and efficiency, I had requested that I be allowed to then make an even shorter presentation on Shell's progress on this vexing subject. Joint chairpersons, I will start then by looking at the presentation outline for SAPIA. Like I said, the real value is in the conversation that we're going to have afterwards. I will touch very briefly on our mandate, the membership, the contribution to the economy, the liquid fuels and petroleum charter. I will then look at the charter measurements and conclude on 1 or 2 recommendations that are in line with both the Department of Energy and indeed NERSA. As an industry association, we aspire to be a respected industry body which enhances the reputation of the petroleum sector and adds value to its member companies and indeed all stakeholders. Our mission for existence is working together within the petroleum industry to promote social and economic growth for the broader good of all South Africans and industry. As I had already indicated, the membership is really amongst the international oil companies, British Petroleum South Africa, represented by Mr. Sipoma Sego, my colleague is here, Chevron, Engen, Petro SA, the national oil company, Sasol, Shell South Africa, and Total. Looking at the contribution, we really looked just at 2-3 bullet points that this industry contributes almost 2% of South Africa's GDP, supplying about 18% of South Africa's primary energy. We manufacturing more than 90% of South Africa's petroleum products. We employ in excess of 100,000 people directly and indirectly. We do not even include the petrol attendants, because then the numbers become a bit cumbersome. We sell approximately 25 billion liters of petroleum products annually. This is mostly liquid fuels, really petrol and diesel. And again, in this number, we excluded things like oil. We spend, just in 2009, 115 million South African rands. We took this only from our members' audited financial statements. We know that they spend slightly more than this. We collect on behalf of government almost 43 billion rand in fuel taxes on petrol, diesel, and in illuminating paraffin, which is an important source of revenue for this government. SAPIA and its members are signatories to the Liquid Fuels and Petroleum Charter, which was the very first indeed promulgated about 10 years ago. The charter applies to the privately owned part of the industry and to all parts of the value chain, amongst others, exploration and production of oil, liquid fuels pipeline, the single bore moorings, depots, and indeed storage tanks. Oil refining and synthetic fuel manufacturing plants, including lubricants, transport, including road haulage, and coastal shipping and trading, including import and export, versus just wholesaling and retailing assets / infrastructure. All the seven signatories committed to transferring 25% of ownership and control of all facets of the industry over this 10-year period. And we're happy to report that a majority of us, 10 years later on, are very close to that number. Some of the challenges around the charter measurements, which are different from the code of good practice, you'll realize that there is no scorecard. It does put a particular emphasis on ownership and control, on capacity building and employment equity, and it does indeed, rightly so, focus on procurement, and then lastly on consultation, monitoring, evaluation, and reporting. Joint Chair, we made a number of recommendations, again, which are aligned in consultation with the department. We thought that the first should be an alignment to the Code of Good Practice on broad-based black economic empowerment, because the people that we do business with, the country and all our stakeholders, this is the instrument that they use. We are making this recommendation because the definitions are very clear. It is a commonly accepted scorecard by the country. Verification by the credited verification agencies is very easy to monitor. If we did that, we'll then be aligning with the national policy on broad-based black economic empowerment. And we strongly believe that if we did that, we'll follow a national strategy for broad-based black economic empowerment. Chairperson, I stop there so that we can then, with Executive Director Fani, take any questions.
Thank you very much, Safia, the man with two heads. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, members of Parliament, we are now going to questions, discussions, and response. Can I see who's the first one? We will start. Members, it's your time now. Mr. Chigalana is number one. Honorable Lucas is number two. Number three was Dr. Mutau. Four is Honorable Nyambi. Five is Honorable Moss. Six is Honorable Tinto. Is that Honorable Gamere? Is there any more? All right. We close with that round, Honourable Jigalan.
Chair, I'll take the first bite. I've got just a string of questions here. The first one is that it would have been lovely if the committee secretary or whoever would have provided us with a copy of the charter, because some of us are new here. And secondly, with regard to the department, if I picked up well, reference was made to four pillars of the charter for empowerment. But I just had a look at the BEE Code of Good Practice. There are seven pillars there. If the department can just, you know, help me and obviously others to, what about the other three? Are they not considered? Because my understanding is that the codes of good practice are used as a scorecard anywhere and everywhere. Reference was made that tracking and monitoring mechanisms are weak. Now, in such a strategic industry, is there any reason for that? Why is it that there has been no investment to ensure that tracking and monitoring mechanisms are strong enough. At the expense of repeating, Chair, energy in any country is a strategic industry. So I find it very, very difficult to grapple and comprehend how can monitoring mechanism be weak. Lastly, fronting. I'm not asking crude forms of fronting that you see coming out in papers. I ask sophisticated forms of fronting because, once again, this is energy. It's an industry that's just not confined in one country. It straddles countries, it straddles continents. It involves billions and trillions. There's a lot of political turmoil behind it. Now, what is of interest is that to what extent has the department been able to grapple with this area? Let's hear a little bit of that. Lastly, to Sapia, unless I missed when I was listening, but I tried attentively to listen. But then the question is, to what extent has Sapia members complied to the Code of Good Practice? God bless.
Honorable Lucas.
Thank you, Chair. I'll confine my remarks initially to the department, and then we can maybe move on to Sapia and the others. Just something that strikes me about the report from the department. Oh, and thanks to Mr. Mabuso for not using the word challenges and saying we have problems. Because we tend to be very euphemistic in this country. We play down things, we want to be politically correct, and we never actually get to the issue. We actually have problems, so we need to consult them. But in trying to deal with the problems, we've got to be careful not to create new problems. I start from the back, because that's usually where the meat is. When I look at your way forward, one of the points that is made by the department. I know this is just something that you're thinking about, but I'm actually saying as you think about, be aware of the dangers. When we talk of the possibility of creating niches for the previously disadvantaged, you know, the HD people. One of the big issues that comes out of here, especially with regard to the retail market, is that it's saturated, because it looks like most of the people who are supposed to be empowered go in there because they think it's easy picking. I can tell you, it's not easy picking. I work in the industry. It's a very, very difficult industry. So when we start looking at the way forward and understand the frustration of the department, understand the need to see that things are happening, see that the previously disadvantaged are throughout the value chain, the niche problem actually does the opposite. As soon as you create a niche for people, then they tend to go into that niche and they never become part of the whole chain. What we should be looking for is where the blockages are, and I see you've highlighted a number of those blockages, and we should ask ourselves, what are the issues? Just as an example, why are these people cited where they cannot make money, for instance, if it's a filling station? The impression I'm getting, the feeling I'm getting is that maybe there might be a system where Safia and itself, the big guys, they are manipulating the system. Is that true? Is that something that we need to look at? We look at those kinds of things, see how we can resolve them, and that can only happen when the department, NERSA, and the major appreciate the fact that they are on the same side. For me, it still seems like there is this big divide. We will do what the department wants us to do, only to a certain point, and maybe we've got to get away from ticking boxes. Lastly, could one of the big problems in this industry be that to comply, for the majors to comply, or for the department to comply, we take people who do not have the requisite skills, who have not been in the industry, we license them, and then we set them up for failure. I think that's a very important thing for us to look at. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Makao. Honorable Nyambi. Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chair. The first one is linked to what has been raised by Honorable Njikala. It's directed to the department. Maybe if they can take us on board to have a particular understanding why the four pillars instead of seven, maybe the information that we don't have that we're supposed to have, because it seems as if from their presentation there are some developments. The second one is directed to Safia. In one of your slides, you indicated that we have spent more than $150 million on corporate social investment initiatives. If you can, I know that you are doing a presentation, but if you can try to do a little bit of elaboration, you might have heard from us when we're doing the introduction. Some of us said we are coming from the National Council of Provinces, of which, in terms of the constitution, we are directly dealing with the interests of these provinces. So I want to hear how you have spent the $115 million that you said you have spent on corporate social investment. Then the last one, Chairperson, it's directed to Safia again. I've noted that your office is named Shanghai House. For interest sake, why Shanghai House? Thanks, Chairperson.
A little more.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I can't say we wait for a long time for this time to come, for this day to come. But I must say, I'll open a trust after this. The caravan will move in. It will not be a talk show that we really want to implement. And I think it's long overdue. I'm just checking on the fuel charter. It was adopted in November 2000. And if I'm checking and looking on the presentation, even in the previous event we have in Free State,
everything really 10 years is down to the drain, and this sector has not been transformed. And I hope that this 2 days, when we listen to the presentations, and after we're doing our assessment, have to wait for, and we're saying, for another 10 years will come, and things must really happen, and we take the stock. So, Chairperson, I really want to say, even if you look in the populace, as the previous colleagues were saying, there's a lot of things must be done on the development of this industry. If you're looking in your post, you see that's where things happen. But if you see in your post no CEOs or MDs, then the people are saying and according to the Act, where they can make sure those things be happening on the Employment Equity Act of 1998. And then we're saying, did this different sectors take this act very important when it comes to the board or the CEOs or the MDs of the departments? Secondly, I want to say the person is about the issue of the transformation when it comes to those youth stations. I know the land transforming is a challenge for us, but I think we can overcome it because in the rural areas, we're sitting with this challenge where our disadvantaged communities or empowered people not be empowered to come in this industry. And if the, we know that rural development is now also a department and it is key for us as the ANC-led government that rural development must be taken seriously up. And I also think when I'm saying that, then I also saying that we must really look how can we transform those societies when it comes to fuel and those fuel stations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Moss. Honorable Quinto.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Chair, to the department. I mean, now that I agree that for the past 10 years, they have failed the HDFA. I didn't hear exactly what's the way forward. What are they going to do for transformation, training, the skills development? Are there any plans to train the present, especially the retailers? Are there any plans? And also the you know, I agree with you, Mr. Mabuso, when you say the retailers, especially in the Western Cape, are closing down instead of improving. I know that they are closing down. But why can't you have the licensing so that these people can also get a retail in the freeways instead of getting retails in the densely populated townships only. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Quinto. Honorable Gamere.
Thanks, Chair. My apologies. I was just getting ready. Firstly, as a comment, Chair, it was mentioned that they couldn't reach about the target about women and so on. I just wanted to add the issue also of youth and people with disabilities in the industry. Very little or nothing at all was said about that. Now, the other issue for all of us, the mere mention that there's no licensed HDFA wholesale company importing, I'm sure it's a serious indictment. But we need to be doing something. What are the plans to all the presenters? Can we have some deliberate, you know, and biased plans to say, now we want to target this, that we have got HDSA, but a license that will import. The other issue is that when we want to level the playing field, hence we have this 26%, which is a minimum. And when we actually struggle to get the 26% in some instances, do we have a time frame? When are we going to level the playing field if we keep on going on with the 26-74? Because those that are at 74 keep on moving forward and forward and faster. And when is the time frame in the industry general that will certainly stop them? Now, to answer specifically, it would be the issue of continuing issuing licenses when some or even most are not being used. Is it the issue of just paperwork or work? One is at work because we'll keep on applying and we'll keep on issuing our licenses, but there are no outcomes. What's the plan to do that? Well, for SAPIA, it has been asked the same thing. You know, we have four pillars instead of seven. SAPIA. Directly, would you also, as SAPIA, say now we are targeting the HDSA, you know, and we have this target? Would you set yourself a target that isn't per province? We heard that 60% of these things are in Gauteng. What's the plan to spread the cake deliberately? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kamede. Honorable Ralph. I know, honourable members, that you have raised hands. We're coming back for a second round, or if you want to. Let's ask the honourable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. Are you giving me the opportunity? But if it's agreed to. Thank you. Just a small remark, sir, and also my question perhaps addressed to NERSA. NERSA is saying that the mandate is limited by legislation. I would just like to ask the question, what does NERSA believe is limiting their mandate, and perhaps give us an indication as to what the current position is, and as opposed to the desired position seen by the regulator in terms of getting us an effective solution to some of the problems. Just lastly, to make the remark that I believe that NERSA can play a huge role in terms of the four pillars, the ownership, control, procurement, and black representation, and give us an opinion as to what the desired position should be. Thank you.
Honorable Matibela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is to SAPIA. The mission is working together within the petroleum industry to promote social and economic growth for the broader good of all South African and industry. Now, I've got a question here that I didn't understand quite well here on the signatories committed to transfer 21% ownership and control of all phases of the industry over a 10-year period. I didn't hear how far you were. Perhaps I was still at home. I don't know, because I'm coming from home. The last one is about the charter, the measurements of the charter. You are saying the charter there's no scorecard for ownership and control, capacity building and employment, equity, procurement, consult, monitoring and evaluation and reporting. Is that so? Thank you. And with the department spoke about the women, which is the department, yeah, black women not, the women not participating. And what does the department do for the women in order for them to be participants in the industry? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Now we have had three musketeers slipping into the room without introducing themselves. So I would like to ask the handsome, I believe, the co-chair tells me, it's a handsome gentleman, next to Honorable Lucas, to introduce yourself. And then the other handsome gentleman next to Honorable Zipolana, and then the beautiful lady next to Honorable Chen, to introduce yourselves, please.
My name is Joyce Lau, member of the Energy Portfolio Committee.
Apologies, Chair, for arriving late. We just caught up to some other Ahmed within our committee. Well, the Youth League always wakes up early, so it can take the fittest work. I'm Susiso Khadel from the Portfolio Committee of the NH. Thanks.
Honorable Chairperson, my name is Elsa van Lingen. I'm a member of the NCLP, and I'm terribly sorry I was late. It was the plane. It wasn't me. Thank you.
As long as there was no jet fuel problem, eh? And the jet fuel was fine. Okay. In order, I think let's take the department first and then Nersa and Safia to answer the question.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm going to deal with some of the questions, and then my colleague, Mr. Mavuso, will also deal with the others. Just perhaps by way of, introduction, I think we've always proceeded from a position as a department that the charter was really a voluntary assumption of responsibility by members of the industry and together with the department. And I think that is very important if we are going to achieve meaningful transformation in the country, which is orderly as well. So that's where we started from. Just to deal with the issue on the monitoring. One, the monitoring of compliance was proceeding quite well initially. That I must indicate up front. However, there were competing challenges that emerged. And one of those challenges that emerged, which in our assessment as a department caused us, a slight detour, was the challenge of the liquid fuels shortages that came about as a result of a transition, when lead was phased out and there were changes in fuel specification. If one looks at from the period just preceding that and up to the time when the licensing actually started, getting traction, basically there was a defocus. The focus then became more on ensuring that this economy does not grind to a halt. Because I think we can all remember when we had those shortages in 2000 and end of 2005. And our calculation then was that if the country runs dry,
you basically have a billion rand that you lose on a daily basis. So I think we would have to admit that, you know, for that period, we basically did take the eye off the ball in as far as the monitoring was concerned. But of course, what I had said at the beginning, that this was there was an understanding that this is an objective that people signed up to and said that in 10 years, this is where we will be. So really, it was also on the part of the signatories to ensure that there is movement in as far as that is concerned. Linked to that is that the licensing, as Mr. Mavuso indicated, was operationalized in 2006. Our eye is firmly back on the ball in as far as economic transformation is concerned. That I can indicate. The Indaba that was launched by the minister, that was hosted by the minister in Bloemfontein, was basically an indication that the eye of the department is firmly on the empowerment and economic transformation ball. On the issue of PEP, there was a misunderstanding. We do have ACSAs that are importing. We do have some of them actually do import significant volumes of both petrol, diesel, and recently crude oil as well. But of course, we believe that that is not enough. It is not enough. More can be done, and we are going to work together with the industry to make sure that those figures are improved and improved significantly and quickly. On the issue asked raised by Honorable Njikelana on the whole focus of the department on the industry, I think we do recognize that this is a very strategic sector, and it's a sector that globally is changing, and it's changing very, very fast, and these are some of the things that we need to grapple with, because what you are seeing is an emergence of new players in the sector globally, and the de-emphasis on international oil companies in certain aspects. And I guess the question is, what is South Africa going to do to respond to those changes? And those are the issues that we are dealing with. However, I must say that there are also opportunities, because as the international oil companies look to divest from certain areas of the value chain, then that also creates an opportunity. This is where the department should then ensure that whoever comes in is then able to ensure that we achieve economic transformation. Mr. Mavuso will deal with some of the questions in order, the one on the pillars, and the rest of the questions.
Thank you. I think the question that was asked by Honorable Tugelana was, why are we using the four pillars? But if you look at my presentation, I started by saying that we will use the information as having been given to us by industry. Using those pillars, for example, that the information that we had was like easily identifiable and readily measured. Hence, the four pillars lend themselves to be the instruments that we ended up talking to. We do recognize that
there are actually seven pillars. But if you look at the information that we were given and the annual report, the other three are very not clear, and it would be difficult for us to make, for example, conclusions. For example, the issue of a supportive culture is something that really, if you look at the information and the annual reports, is really mentioned. Hence, we just concentrated on the four. And I'd also like to say that if you look at the four go to the heart of what this transformation is all about. Remove them, then you would not even crack the ground. So that is the reason why we ended up with the four. But I also want to emphasize that the charter, as it were, the instrument that we've been given, we talked about a 10-year review. And for us as the department, this is the defining moment. So if you're going to see us, as Mr. Makobelo also mentioned, that we are taking our mandate in terms of exactly what happened and what should happen from now on. For example, we now going to have an audit from which is an audit that will be a definitive perspective on the journey. And then the review that will follow after that will then say what is it that needs to be done. So I think the other issues that we covered in terms of the questions of what is it that we're going to do on the specific issues, those are the issues that will be identified in the audit. And second, then the review will address them directly. Thank you, sir.
Sorry, sir. Through you. If I just deal with the issue of the youth and people with disabilities, definitely I think on the issue of people with disabilities, I don't think that we have done as well as we should have. On the issue of the involvement of the youth, I think that there are strides being made in that regard. The only concern that we have as a department is that the youth is not, people are trained, continuously trained and trained and trained. But the deployment of those people sometimes does not offer them opportunities to can gain traction in the areas in which they were trained. And that is something that we are always lamenting in our discussions with the industry, that we need to, after the training, people then need to be, if a person was being trained on crude oil trading, then they need to spend time there instead of being trained and given a managerial position, the week after. They need to gain traction in trading and get to know the ins and outs of that. So those are some of the, I think, the perhaps throughout the economy, these are the observations that we make, that perhaps it's after the training that we don't give people the necessary experience. On the issue of the retailers, and especially the ones on the freeways, we are continuously engaging with industry on those. Because we believe that, there should be a way found to ensure that there is sufficient participation in those. However, the complication there is that, some of these entities are not directly owned by the oil company. They are privately owned companies, but it's also up to us as a department to start engaging them and nudge them in the direction of ensuring economic transformation. I think on the department side, Chair, that's, unless we've missed a question.
You'll come back to the Mercer.
Thank you, Chair. According to my record, the only two questions directed at NERSA, the one was why do you license unused facilities? The fact of the matter is that you cannot regulate that facility if it is not licensed. Which leads me to the questions posed by Honorable Ross as to what are the constraints or what are the limiting factors in our legislation. I think the first one is that one, you cannot regulate an unlicensed facility. That is a number one, and besides, it's not criminalized in the Act. The second issue is that when NERSA is issuing license, we must impose license conditions, and we can only impose license conditions in a manner prescribed. Now, the manner prescribed is contained in Regulation 8, which says that we must gather information only. It does not go beyond that. Now, the ideal would obviously be to look at the legislation in its entirety to ensure that perhaps the minister may set thresholds that NERSA can use to impose license conditions. We cannot deny to grant a license on the basis of a company not meeting certain HDSA requirements. Our role is limited to imposing conditions of submitting information annually on all those areas, shareholding, directorship, management, procurement, and so on. So it's information gathering. There's no enforcement, as it were. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sophia.
Honorable Co-Chairs, we recorded six questions that were directed at Sapia. The other two were common around compliance and the 26% ownership and transfer, and I'll combine those two. On the issue of compliance, I think we are the first one as an industry to admit that whilst there's still a lot of progress that needs to be made, there has, however, been some progress. In the department's own presentation, the point two that deals with compliance in terms of the pillars, we will see that there has been considerable movement, especially on the ownership, which we really believe is a cornerstone of transformation, from a measly 6% around November of 2000 to almost 26% to date. In terms of management and control, whilst we do not have a single woman CEO or MD in the seven members, 5 years ago, there wasn't a single black MD or CEO in the industry. Now when we make a delegation to see the Minister of Energy, there is more black male and one or two smatterings of Europeans in that group. What we still need to work on is to find more women to come and join our ranks. So it is a journey, and we think we will be able to prevail. On the 115 million rents that is spent on CSI, this is an aggregated number that is far less than the 1% net profit after tax that is required by the Code of Good Practice, and of course the 3% on social economic development. So if you look at the revenue generated just by the industry, you'll see that number should be closer to 3.6 billion rands, not just 115. But this is the number that we record as Sapia. It's spread mostly around three areas. One is on the environmental sustainability, secondly on education related to energy, thirdly on poverty related to energy, especially around rural energy poverty with our integrated energy centers amongst the poorest of the poor. We now have almost 26 of these IECs in areas where ordinarily the economics would not make sense for one to have a filling station, but they are used for illuminating paraffin, for access, for internet, but also some of them for some of the community activities. The other question is, why is the SAPIA head office called Shanghai House? On that one, we apologize. It is a rented facility. We are just tenants, the same way that in 1992, the ANC head office was called Shell House. and during the massacre was called the Shell House Massacre. It was only later that it was referred to as Lutuli House. HDSA targets, we've spoken about that. We have set ourselves some HDSA targets moving forward, which we've already shared in a two-day strategic workshop with the DDG, Mr. Tsidiso Makubela, where we've agreed a substantial movement in the seven elements of the Codes of Good Practice. And in due time, when they are ready, they will be able to share this with the rest of the country. On youth and disability, just to say on the youth, as SAPIA, we have always tried to find youth formations. We are now working with NAFCOC's youth chamber, and indeed the BMF. When the BMF investment was formed, were a critical part of that, and saying, can some of their members partake of the opportunities that are available in the energy sector. We also have been engaging with Mr. Malusike Kana, when it was still called Umsobomvu Youth Fund, now the National Youth Development Association, where we have given some of their members some of the sites that are not in particularly poor areas. And if I can make an example, Bongane Khazia owns the Umtata Ultra City, which pumps not 300,000 liters per month, but 11 million liters per annum. Winkima Gazi and Pinkim Hudi own the one in Midrand, where on average, through their entity called NAP, they own 18 sites and they pump on average 8.5 million liters a month, not per annum. So we believe that some of these are really in those entities where it should be easy for them to be profitable. In KwaZulu-Natal, one of the most affluent areas is Blair Athol, and that site is owned by an African female. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Sophia. You're making reference to Shanghai House, and you are renting. So that means you have to change your name to HDSA House or something, instead of Shanghai House. Honourable members, you know we are running behind time, and we want to take a second bite of the cake, because we've got the people here now, and you know, we see them again, Honourable Makau, after how many times. So we've got them here now, but on the other hand, someone has sent me a note to say my sugar levels are getting low, I need to have some tea. So we don't want to be inhumane. We'll break for 10 minutes, or if we can, 5 minutes, because we are running behind time. We'll break for 5 minutes, we'll come back, we'll take the second round of questions. But just before we break, we had another, as the co-chair was saying to me, a sexy gentleman walked in, and we would just like him to introduce himself so that we know who we are talking to. So he's not sexy, he says to himself, I'm not sexy. So. But let us hear, what is your name, where do you come from, you can leave, your other status, leave that.
I've got 7 names, one for each day of the week, but call me Elegant Chabele. For now. And actually, there's a question I wanted to ask. I don't know if it's correct. the Europeans, which country in Europe do they come from? Those Europeans are talking about.
You'll answer that after tea, which country in Europe. We'll break for 5 minutes. It is now 11:59. Can we be back by 11:45, please? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, can we get started, please? Those that are outside, can you just proceed in? And if we that is inside can take our seats and we start. You know, the petroleum industry, guys, has a lot of time. Unfortunately, Chief, can you just call those people in, please? Is there anybody from Sasol? Okay, honorable members and captains of industry, can we just relax and take our seats? I've got Honorable Mguni, who's the other hand? Honorable Lee, Honorable Mato, Honorable Hadebe, Honorable Nikilana, and then the co-chair. All right, we are closing the list, members. Now, we are not democratic to us, so we are just closing now. Thank you. Honorable Mguni.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my first comment, Chairperson, is that what I've noticed, not only today, but when you meet a lot of corporates in private industry, most of the time they'll send their black managers or HDN, so that project phase, that is transformation, even if there is no transformation. As you have seen in this industry, they set the figure on total board members, management and such, the industry puts it at 41%. But as Mr. Mavuso said, the figure might actually be less if you take out Petrosa board and management. So I just want to find out from all the men, all the ladies and gentlemen who are here, what is the motive that they sent you here? My second question, Chairperson. We have seen that import is 0.5% or less than that. Talking to a friend, I have a friend who is also in the industry on a retail basis. He mentioned that actually they've got difficulty in importing because major companies, Shell, BP, Sasol, whoever, I don't know, because they don't have storage. If they import, they don't have storage to put their products. Or if they import crude oil, there's no way they can store it because these big industries, they monopolize storage. And we've just seen that the presentation by NASA that some of the actual of the infrastructure they closed down, but those companies won't give it to HDSA or to the disadvantaged people for them to make use of that infrastructure. Now, how do you expect us, or how do you expect government to bring about transformation if you, as industry or as major companies, are reluctant to release the infrastructure to privately disadvantaged people in order to empower them? How do you expect transformation to happen? My second question, Chairperson, is to NASA as well. On the instruments, the CEO, Mr. Mkwena, mentioned that he actually, even if they can have the power to transform, or they can give even power to actually, I think transform those industries or the industry. But there's no harmonization of instruments. What is mentioned is the BBB, EE, ports, authorities, liquid fuel, etc., and fuel charter, petroleum pipelines, regulations, act. I just want to find out, Chairperson, within these instruments, what are the impediments that can make the industry not to transform, or can impede you as NASA not to transform the industry? Because from the presentation, it seems we are still just scratching the surface as far as this transformation is concerned. In the interest of time, Chairperson, those are my main questions. Oh, just one more. It's on the issue of exploration and probably importing. You haven't heard the department or NASA or SAPIA telling us about how many previously disadvantaged individuals or companies are actually involved in exploration of oil reserves. And what is the department or industry doing to transform that industry or to fast-track, expedite the process in that category? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mguna. Honorable Lee. Chairman, I'd like to ask the department, whichever official wishes to answer, the impact that the Charter has had and or any additions and changes to the Charter are anticipated to have upon the empowerment of black people in general, rather than the enrichment of a handful. Is that the objective of the Charter, or is the objective simply to place ownership, et cetera, in black hands, no matter how few there are? Secondly, Mr. Chairman, I'm intrigued by the reference to crude traders, quite loosely mentioned by Mr. Mabuso, and perhaps the CIPA can also assist me here. People in the room should know that many of us are laymen in this field, and so we don't always have a full background to this. So when I hear the word trader, I assume it's genuinely a trader, someone who purchases crude on the world market somewhere and then on sells it to the refiners. Now, do we really need traders
I don't know. Do the major oil companies not purchase directly from source? And what impact would an increase in the number of traders who seek to make their own profits, usually quite large profits, have upon the price of fuel within the country? I'm somewhat perturbed by the loose numbers that Master Mabuso gives us. He claims to be at the heart of licensing it or whatever it is, and yet the numbers are all round numbers, except when strangely he gets to the Western Cape with 903, not 900. The others are 15,500, 6,000. He challenges the numbers from the industry, and yet his own numbers, I'm somewhat surprised, are so vague, if indeed he has got the handle on this and he is so close to it. So I'm somewhat concerned about that. The other is that he claims that the fact that there are only 20 new applications or licenses issued in a year means there's something wrong with the market. Sir, it's not the market. It's the manipulation of the market that's wrong. If it were left to the market, things would run smoothly. And so let's not play games with words. It's not the market that's wrong. It's the intervention of the state in the market which causes these imperfections in the way the industry operates. The question of saying that when a turnover reaches 5 billion rand, suggestion is that at that point there should be a requirement, incentive, I'm not quite sure which, for 25% to be divested. By my calculation, 5 million equates to about 600,000 litres, and we know that a kind of break-even or small profit is made at 300,000 litres. In my experience with filling stations, 300,000 is you battle to make a living, and in fact, I sold a service station because at 300,000 it couldn't make a living. And so I'm somewhat concerned about the low threshold which is being talked about at that level. The suggestions that are being made by the department in terms of how the charter can be changed, I hesitate to use the word improved, have these been tested as being constitutional? Or are they just ideas that are being thrown out and will in due course be tested against the Constitution? Mr. Chairman, I too was somewhat horrified at the extent to which political correctness has now gone, that a name of Chinese origin has to be apologized for. I make no apologies for my name, which is of Scottish and English origin. Nevertheless, I was also somewhat horrified by the fact that perhaps, and I need clarity, perhaps people, South Africans of a pale hue such as myself, are now European. My entire life I have spent filling in forms where my race was asked for by putting in South African. I have never, and I will never, put my race down as white or anything else. I am a South African. I am not a European, and I never have been. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Lees. Honourable Martel.
Thank you, Chair. Let me make a point about something that I picked up earlier, and it's obviously something to do with both the department and Sophia. In a previous life, I worked for one of the oil companies, the big one, and it shall remain nameless. And when we were discussing this whole thing about BEE, and we said to the company, they need to give shares to the employees. They denied. They said it can't be done because the employees work for the company. There will be a conflict of interest and stuff like that. What, of course, they didn't mention was that people like myself, who were employees and senior management, also had shares in the company. So the point I'm making here is that many, many times, companies find excuses not to do the right thing, even when they know it is the right thing to do. The approach of the department in terms of the charter is the right one. the attitude that SAPIA adopted originally is the right one, that it is a voluntary thing, this is what, where we want to be. What we have to make sure is that they should not cut corners. So my question to SAPIA is, for those members of SAPIA who are slacking behind, who are not coming to the party, are there any mechanisms within the industry itself to make sure that these people do not put the industry into disrepute? Because the most important thing we need to understand about what this is trying to achieve, and we need to move away from this ownership thing and a few things here and procurement here. It's about people, indigenous people in this country, being part of the whole value chain. They should be in importing crude. They should be in refining it. They should be in selling the final product. What we are doing is that we are actually sleeping backwards, because we are putting ourselves in a situation where we will know, oh, all the retailers are black and all the importers are Caucasian or whatever. We've got to move away from that. So I need to hear from SAPIA what they are doing to do that. The other issue that I need to raise is this, and the department is lamenting this problem, and NASA has a similar problem. Stronger monitoring, clearly we can debate that when the time comes, and making sure that you have teeth. One of the most important lessons that anybody in business learns very quickly is that people don't do what you expect. They do what you inspect. And if you can inspect something, then you can at least say to the guys, this is what you're supposed to do. But then you also need something. Is there any incentive that they should do what they do? So these are some of the issues that clearly, and in the case of NASA with the licensing, and in the case of the department who has to monitor, have got to answer. But I'm keen to hear whether the industry itself has ways of encouraging people. We don't want to get to a point where we pass laws to have 70% of this and that. Because once we do that, we're back to cultures, we're back to the wrong things, and we do the right things for the wrong reason. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mato. Honorable Khadebe.
Well, thanks, Chair. The person, I think, in order for the HDSA not to complain too much about not being given space or being able to participate within the oil industry, maybe we should nationalize this oil industry. Then it will give them an opportunity so that it is, they can benefit. But Chair, I think we should, I also, you know, came to NERSA at some certain stage harshly to say you can't want to softening up issues of transformation. You can't go soft on issues of ensuring that BEE is enforced. You know, I can't understand why can't all these other oil companies allow these HDSL to participate fully. Maybe it's because we're too soft, we're being generous to what is not supposed to be. You know, you can't have a charter that's, you know, it's always in front of you every day for more than, 10 years now. But still, you haven't managed to see whether there are loopholes there and there. That means yourself, you're not doing your job properly. And it's going to give us a very serious problem. But, you know, I was expecting a meaty presentation from SAPIA. Unfortunately, you know, they couldn't give us the meaty taste of it. They give us a bite, you know, finger large. You don't need finger large. We want the meat about SAPIA. Once you tell us that SAPIA, you know, give us a 2% within the GDP, contributing a lot of, that doesn't give us any sense. Because they give us that 2%.
But if I can ask you that you must translate it into economic development and the beneficiaries in terms of this HDSA, you won't be able to give it to me, unless you can give it to me today. Because you can't expect us to glorify and say, hey, there's millions and billions of rands that are coming to the GDP of the country. Because we're talking about developmental states. We must speak about, when we say this is the amount that's coming to the country, it must translate into all these other programs that are placed. Talking in terms of, you know, youth development, women empowerment. Because it can't be at this stage, we're more than 15 years, but we're still talking about women empowerment into positions. When you come here, I think another member just said there that you just put it a nice face of black, you know, managers or directors here. But in the background, there's another color. It's not about the color. It's about transformation within itself. And we can't always come here to this platform as a crying session. Always bringing one and saying, hey, problems. Hey, we've got problems with human empowerment. Hey, there's none. But you don't have program in place to put women empowerment and development within those women. Because you're going to, you know, cry every time and another 5 years, come back here and say, hey, we still have a problem. Hey, there's this thing, women empowerment. Oh, we can't be sitting at the dialing of this transformation. Must be hardly, because at the end of the day, you will come and tell us that, hey, there's problems. So then, please, move aside. Just put another person. Because you can't put this transformation. Because when we talk about women empowerment, we can't always come and cry with one thing. It's just like going into your house. Your wife will tell you that, hey, this light bulb doesn't light. Say, yeah, hey, we'll fix it, man. Tomorrow you come, she cries, you got it. It simply means you're not a man in your own house. You can't fix your own stuff. It really doesn't make sense. If we want to see this country moving forward, let's put practicality within it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khadebe. But we are dealing with fuel, liquid charge. We're dealing with fuel. Liquid fuel, not light bulb. Honorable Tabet.
No, thank you, Co-Chair. Chair, I think maybe for a start, for Sapia, I want to add from what Honorable Member Khadebe said. I'm really disappointed. Really, really disappointed to get such a report from Sapia, because that's the association. I expected much more better report than this one that you presented. So I'm not sure whether you prepared this yesterday or you were in a rush, hurry up, but to me it's totally unacceptable, because it means you don't take members of parliament seriously. And to me that's a problem, if an association can act this way. Secondly, that we were fortunate, three members of the committee, myself, Honorable Lucas, and Moss, were able to represent the committees of parliament at that particular oil and gas Idaba. The presentation we gave there was much better. Much better, but I expected to have a much better than that one, because we discussed with those who were present there to say, it's not acceptable, we want further information, but thorough facts and frankness in all the discussions, now that we must deal with this thing of transformation. To us, transformation is at the core here. So to me, it's totally unacceptable for Mr. Mohali to come and tell us here that this is a journey, 5 years, we realize there were no black people. It's all mixed. And you are saying you're still looking for women. Where are you looking for women in South Africa? That's an insult. I mean, do you mean in this industry you don't have capable women? To me, that's an insult, because you're saying we don't have women in this country who can be in this particular sector. And I fail to understand why. But also, if you check on your presentation charter, management elements, etc., your recommendations are quite, I don't know, I mean, even a kindergarten child, you don't come with such recommendations. They are nothing, zero. Nothing, actually nothing that you say as a an association that I expected much more from you. So I don't know what's going to follow from your members. But to me, that's one problem, number one. We take this very serious. It can't be that. It means you are telling us that it will take another 5 years to come up with women in your boards, etc., and all that. So the first thing is that I'm sure we made a mistake by allowing 10 years to come and assess. 10 years is far too much, too long. I'm sure we're supposed to have in between time to check on this. You know that when it's 10 years, you're much more on the processes. So I hope we won't take another 10 years again. The way forward, as we conclude tomorrow, we'll come up with some better measurement and monitoring. That will make sure as much as this is voluntary, DDG, fine and good. But to me, it doesn't then allow for wrong things to happen under the disguise of a voluntary type of or gentleman's agreement and all that. That if needs be, it means we need then to amend some of the legislation, some even each chapter, you know why, it means it needs much more teeth. Because in some of these things, many of them, you expect that they'll do this, you expect that, and they don't do it. What type of deals that do you come across, but you know exactly you don't have storage facilities? Why then do you allow to such a measure put in here? Then it seems you've got much more problems than to deal with, but I expect the association to take the lead and give us better answers. But the answers given, I'm sorry, to me they are not acceptable. We should not allow such to happen. Leadership overview. You said nothing. You said actually zero, nothing. At the gas and oil in Dava, it was much better, yet percentages, weighing of the scores, which I thought to be able to do it here, throughputs and others. So I really don't know how do you take us for real. The oil and gas in Dava was better. Members of Parliament, no, we'll tell them anything, anyhow. No, please, don't do that. And we hope that we must have a way forward better. Maybe in a month's time, we need to summon you to come back. Because we've got that right, in any way. We're doing nicely to invite you to come to the hearings, but it seems you don't want that. We'll summon the Sabia to come back to us in a month's time with a much better prepared presentation. Not thumbsuck or things that you can think cut and paste. Thorough information in terms of what you'd like to know in order to make a better way forward in terms of this. So I hope you, as the acting chair or whoever, Mr. Mohale, then you'll be able to take this forward. But I'm deeply hurt. I must say I'm deeply hurt that you're not taken serious by Sabia in particular. I figured it's better, but I don't know. The department, I don't know, but there are lots of issues where we can act better as a department. But the licensing also is what I don't understand, because it seems between NERSA and the department, they're just licensing. How do you prove that the license you get are the 11 people? Women, I know some of them happen to be domestic workers that they let them to sign to be part of the consortium that doesn't exist. The poor women sign, they don't know what is it that they are signing for, because in terms of the requirements, it will look good, it complies with whatever. But at the end of the day, these are not people, except poor domestic worker who doesn't know anything about oil industry, etc. But in terms of your record and your licensee, you see, this is right. So I don't understand. Come better. I do accept your recommendations. They are better, but we need to work on them better. NERSA is the same. I mean, NERSA, I don't understand you to wait for all these years. You can't tell us, no, we don't have no power, no teeth, what? Why did you come up with some recommendations before? We are not aliens to you. You come more often to discuss other issues. On this one in particular, that touches about core elements of a transformation. Why don't you come to us to say these are the issues that we believe we have to? The alignment is fine with others, but the core issue that we're dealing with, licensing and other measures, those are the things that we need to know better here and come and get this recommendation, not to wait for hearings. The hearings are good, we are getting those things, but please, can't you have a better way to deal with these issues in a much more better, coherent way? Because we won't see any empowerment, we won't see any transformation in the sector, and to me, it's key. Can't be that 16 years of our democracy, we still sing the same song. Maybe we need to live in this voluntary type of, you know, to the charters and all those things, because it seems people want to be tracked to do something right, and it's not okay if you do that. Yesterday, the Minister of Mineral Resources was dealing with the mining charter, the same problem. Taking too long, 12%, what, 8%, then Section 47 might be looked at. Why should we be forced to do something when you look, when you're supposed to do the right thing? Because we don't have to beg transformation. We must transform. We must transform. We can't beg it. Kneel down. No way. So, Chair, I'm really disappointed. But I hope maybe the companies that will come afterwards who are under SAFIA will give us a better presentation, talking to some of these issues in earnest. Otherwise, then it means we're just wasting time these 2 days of calling the hearings and we come and hear funny stories here. I'm not talking to anything. Thank you.
I just want to complete the picture that I was sketching about the company I referred to earlier, because it was a way of encouraging SAFIA to do the right thing because they know it's the right thing. When we were telling this company that it was good for BEE to bring in employees, all of the employees in the company, and they gave us this, oh, no, no, there'll be a conflict of interest. We worked on them until eventually they agreed. Not only did they give employees the shares, but they gave all the people of South Africa the shares. Today, they are very proud owners of these two share schemes, and they feel very good about them. So, indeed, if the people put their minds to do the right thing, they can do the right thing, and there could be benefits for them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Vitalana?
Yes, thanks, Chair. I'm sorry. I just forgot about the crisis to attend. Apologies. I really do undertake. I'll get PMG to give me the record on my question. But I felt at least let me leave after having asked my question, if you'd allow me. One, Chair, my question on fronting was not answered. I was very forthright about that because I speak from a level of authority, unfortunately. Number two, still with regards to the four pillars of the charter or empowerment, vis-à-vis the codes of good practice. Number one, my understanding was that since the advent of the BE code of good practice, the tool for monitoring empowerment or black economic empowerment would be locked into the codes themselves. I find it strange that the department is still linked to the four pillars as it claims. Whether the industry gives them half-baked or half-glass or half-full information. To me, one of the fundamentals is that government introduces mechanisms and tools to direct and enhance economic development. And in South Africa, economic transformation, and amongst them is the charter. So it would be helpful for us to get them from the department. Did it shift, or it hasn't in any case? Why has it not shifted and located itself or took the codes of good practice as the tool to monitor and evaluate black economic empowerment in the industry? Number two, what about the broadness of empowerment? Historically, we started with BEE, but down the line, we realized that that's Irish coffee. Hence, we introduced broad-based black economic empowerment. And through Chair, I trust and hope each and every of the presenters here, those are still coming, will highlight the broadness. There was a reason that why the state, led by the government of South Africa, introduced the broadness. In NERSA, I think you've already, Honorable Tabete has actually covered a lot of stuff, but what concerns me is reference to the lack of proof of ownership of storage facilities, if I picked up correctly. That's rather spine-chilling. You're handling fuel here. Can they elaborate to you, my honorable leaders, what does it mean? Why was it even allowed to extend even for a day or a few days for people not to provide proof of ownership of storage facilities?
The last one is, please allow me, just a comment.
That's the last one, eh?
Yes, a okay. Comment. Reference was made that with regards to market dynamics, there's criticism on the intervention by the state. I just appeal that when the committee, after all the presentations are done, comes back to this point, it's a tricky point. I don't think it should be left unattended to. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jitila. We start with, as in the order, the department, then NARSA, and then SAPIA.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. There was a question on the exploration and production. Now, I think perhaps I just need to explain there that that is governed by the MPRDA. So, as the law stands at the moment, it's the Minerals and the Petroleum Resources Development Act that governs exploration and production. The number of HDSAs would then be the Department of Mineral Resources would then be in a position to give accurate figures in as far as that is concerned. On the issue, I think perhaps I need to clarify one thing. The charter, although entered into voluntarily, it is law. Currently, it is law, and if you don't comply, you're basically breaking the law. Perhaps up until 2006, one would have looked at it as a voluntary assumption, as I indicated, of responsibility. The impact of the charter on broadly, on the lives of people of this country, broadly. I think it's an area that, quite honestly, does still require attention. We do have a number of successful, very competent, Black-owned companies that operate in this space. Very competent, I must say. Some of them, the CEOs and chairs have worked in industry for 17 years prior to them venturing out into that. But I think the impact on the daily life of ordinary people of this country, I think it's an area that needs attention, and we are focusing on that. For example, this is one of the requirements that we make when somebody has got to get a license to import a petroleum product. On the plans of on the issue of the crude traders and impact of on fuel, certainly, as long as this is still a regulated market, there won't be an impact. We'll make sure that there is no impact. And I also need to indicate that some of the people, as I indicated, that have ventured out and started companies were trained as traders themselves, and they are quite good at it. And so they have mastered the that art of trading, and perhaps there will be more information on that, particularly from as was indicated from Sasol and perhaps Total as well. The plans of the department going forward
Honorable Chairperson, members, I think we think that these hearings actually begin to talk to that, because there is a need for what I call a covenant of South Africa Incorporated in dealing with the liquid fuels space, because it is becoming complex. Africa, in fact, needs a covenant, and which says, how are we going to deal with this sector to the benefit of the peoples of this continent? It's got a lot of shifting sands at the moment. It's shifting. Things are changing, and they're changing fast. I don't think that the responses are as fast as the changes are making, are actually happening. We firmly believe that some form of state intervention would certainly be advantageous. How the form and so on, I think that is a matter that would have to be discussed. I think on the issue of the codes and the charter, codes of good practice and the charter. The charter was an instrument that was agreed to in 2000. The codes came much later. Have we aligned the codes or the charter with the codes? The answer to that, not at this point in time. However, I think South Africa needs to look at also where can the greatest impact in the shortest possible time to the greatest number of people, what is the best vehicle of achieving that? You know, I think that certainly in the review that is, the audit that is being conducted, we hope that we are going to get also some indication, some answers that will point us in the right direction. Thank you very much. On the funding issue, on the funding issue, certainly there is some level of funding, but I must say that some of the companies that have actually received licenses for wholesale are in their own right, you know, very competent, run by competent people. So really the issue of funding, in our view, is that it is encouraged elsewhere. It's not encouraged by the law. It's not encouraged by the regulator, but it is facilitated, you know, in beyond when somebody has actually gotten that license. Then they enter into some deal with somebody else when we are not perhaps in that room. So there could be those that are happening. But perhaps industry could give us more, maybe they have more evidence on that than we do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think my record shows that there were three comments related to NAFTA, and I'll be very, very brief. I think the issue of alignment or harmonization, I emphasize that it will reduce regulatory burden, because companies are already providing information. So if you report in one form, responsible to a particular competent authority, it's easy to take the same report and give it to another competent authority
that is in the area that you work in. I don't think it will impede doing our work. It's just that it will help reducing regulatory burden on the licensees. That's the point I was trying to make. The issue of lack of proof of ownership, I made that example just to say that some of the challenges that we encounter in trying to get information from the applicant is the proof of ownership, and that tends to delay the issuing of a license. At the end of the day, we are licensing, but without that proof of ownership and the ownership structure, we will not allow or grant a license. Which leads to me to make a very brief comment about the remarks the Honorable Co-Chair made, very, very briefly, humbly and respectfully, in that Chair NERSA was established in 2005, and the Petroleum Pipelines Act came to be on the 1st of November 2005. So our preoccupation in our work since the formation of NERSA, if we were to take what we do mainly, it's pricing and tariffs, licensing with license conditions, monitoring and enforcement, and dispute resolution. There are other things that we do, but those are very, very important. And the law is such that you cannot regulate an entity without a license. You regulate a licensee. Therefore, our preoccupation, Madam Co-Chair, has been and still is, although we are moving on to monitoring enforcement, has been largely licensing. Remember, we only started regulating this industry. Unlike in electricity, we started 10 years ago. In this industry, we only started in 2005. Now, as we move on, opportunities such as this provide that space to make this kind of improvement in the transformation of the liquid fuel industry. So to an extent that, Chair, these public hearings, we've been given opportunity to comment. We're looking forward to participate fully in terms of the way forward and the improvements that we have suggested in terms of reviewing legislation. That would be part of our contribution. Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable House, let me start with a vexing question directed by Ms. Tabete that the presentation of Sabia was less than adequate. First to say, I think an apology is in order. The message is heard loud and clear. And I think it is primarily because of two reasons. The first is at the oil and gas endeavor, the feedback that we received was that our presentation was too much, too detailed, and too granular. The second reason is the briefing that we got when we came here is that we had requested that SAPIA only makes a presentation on behalf of the industry, understanding that it is an industry transformation that we're looking at. Right at the end, as we were communicating with this office, we're then told that the individual oil companies themselves have to come and present their own progress towards transformation. As a result of that, of these two facts, we then said, because our understanding of the format was really a conversation, let's make a few key distilled points and leave the substantive presentations to the individual member companies themselves to talk about their efforts around transformation. If we misunderstood this house, we can only apologize. But the presentation that we had made for this we will be able to send it a soft copy to your office. That is slightly more comprehensive. So my apologies. It then brings us also to the second issue that was raised about female representation. Here we agree with the House that South Africa's population of 49.7 million people has 54% of them being women, and that today, 16 years after democracy, that we don't have a single CEO or MD of the seven SAPIA members is indeed said regrettable and tragic. We have gone into our own two-day strategic conversation at SAPIA, whereupon we ask the individual member companies to come up with clear, measurable, and realistic plans about their efforts in ensuring that we have women at the highest levels of policy and decision-making bodies. Which then brings me also to the question that was raised that we could also be more meaty about our 2% contribution to the GDP. And again, we left out the details thinking that we are going to talk about them in individual companies. But if you do the math and you accept that South Africa's GDP is $468 billion, $3.2 trillion South African rand. So the 2% will be $9.2 billion, or $32.4 billion South African rand. So you can do the math and then measure the economic impact. And we did say that out of only that, we collect in the form of taxes about $43 billion that we keep in our forecourt, and then at the end of the day try to transfer it to the necessary authority. On the question of why black faces when we come to parliamentary committees, and I'm not going to address the issue of fronting because we know that it is a common problem that affronts all of us, and I think it needs to be tackled to the singularity of purpose. All I can confirm is that the members of the SAPIA, the seven of us, are the people that are coming here. BP, Southern Africa's boss, is Sipoma Sebo, who is my colleague and my friend. And in Southern Africa, there is no bigger boss than Sipoma Sebo. So if that is bringing a black face, then that's unfortunate. His chairman was Ramph Ramashia for many years, who's just retired. Chevron South Africa, the chairperson is James Ukwadi. And in that company, there is no bigger boss above Chevron. In Engine Petroleum for many years, 5 years we had Rashid. He's just given over to Nizam, and both of them are Malaysians, but they are black. Petro SA, Sipho Mkhize, that you know. Sasol Limited in petrol is Maurice Kadebe. And Shell is Bonang Mohale. I am the chairman and the vice president of sales and operations. In simple English, I am the country group CEO. And above me, in South Africa, there is no bigger boss. In total, the CEO is Jean-Denis Royer. He is a Frenchman, and he describes himself as a European. And I agree with the Honorable Speaker that for white South Africans, they are South Africans. And that's what we've been fighting for the last 300 years, so that all of us can look at ourselves in the mirror and proudly affirm that we are South Africans. But Jean-Denis Royer is not. He's a Frenchman. So he's European. It was in that context that I said seven of the members, only one or so, is still managed by a European. And again, the challenge, without overemphasizing the issue, is this is a bunch of males, not enough females, and for that we'll come up with active plans in a short period of time. On the issue of the shares for employees, and again, we're eternally grateful for the efforts of many of the forebears that came to these companies before us. The Serge Mudaus of this world, the Humphrey Causas, the Royal Causas, the Zamani Jalis, who have laid the foundation to make it easy for us to be CEOs and MDs. And as a result, in the majority of our members, now there is this animal called ESOP, or Employee Share Auction Program, where the employees themselves, from the highest of the high to the lowest of the low in janitorial services, they also have an equal chance of owning some shares in the companies that we currently run and oversee. And then lastly, I also agree, I think, with the House that the migration from the Black Economic Empowerment Act to a broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act was to recognize the broadness. And technically speaking, that broadness did not talk to 300,000 rural women. Critically important, that is, the broadness was in the measurement to move away from the narrow definition of only focusing on ownership to broadening that measurement to look at the seven elements of ownership, of management control, of procurement, of employment equity, of socio-economic development, of enterprise development and indeed skills development. That's our understanding of the broadness, and we are trying and doing our level best to make sure that we are more than compliant with this new understanding of the broadness. Thank you, Chair. If there's any that I've left, I'll come back to it.
Thank you very much. Can you switch off your mic, please? So the boss must get someone to switch off the mic. Hey, it's a big boss. He says there's no bigger boss.
Just a quick follow-up, Chair. Can the industry tell us about the withholding of infrastructure and storage capacity for importing AHDS?
Just repeat that.
The industry tell us about the whole withholding of infrastructure, even though they're not using it, and the importing storage for AHDS.
Chairperson, I left that question because it's a regulatory question. I will leave it to my friend Munda Mukwena to talk about how legislatively they're going to address that. But you will see when we make our presentation at Shell Oil Products Africa, that it was in 2000 that we sold 25% of the totality of the company to Terry Investments. In 2008, we then decided to sell them 25% of the refinery that is jointly owned with BP called Cyprus, through which 85% of all the imported crude that comes to the country and indeed the nine provinces does flow through that single Bomori. And as part of that, our biggest depot of the 21 that we oversee in Alberton, there is some storage capacity that we put aside for historically disadvantaged South Africans. Exactly the same way in crude procurement, the department will be happy to know, and we'll show this in our presentation, that we now have five companies that we regularly co-procure with them in terms of crude, even though it was excluded in the initial liquid fuels and petroleum charter. And Tebe Investment today now has an entity called Tebe Energy that we created to allow them to be able to trade in crude.
Thank you. The boss has now shifted the responsibility to the regulator. Is the regulator prepared to answer what the boss has said?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure where to start, but briefly, as I indicated, the evolution of economic regulation in this industry has been largely limited to the product, as governed by the Petroleum Product Act. The Petroleum Pipeline Act only came into being in 2005. Now, as I indicated, the emphasis has been on licensing. And through that period, we have learned some lessons in terms of the three areas, that is, the loading facilities, the storage, and the pipeline. And as I indicated in the presentation, the storage facilities are a challenge. And as we have now licensed almost all of these facilities, the next phase of our work will involve monitoring and enforcement and in situ inspection. As I indicated, it is difficult to prove uncommitted capacity. So one would have to be there. One would have to interrogate the agreements that the oil majors have among themselves to use each other's facilities, and because that the HADS argued seems to exclude the new entrants, and in particular the HDSAs. But Chair, to answer the question broadly, is that I think as we do licensing, because of the ownership structure and because of the product that is kept in those storages, we will be able, as we move forward, through monitoring and enforcement, to ensure that the uncommitted capacity in these facilities are made available to small entrants or other entrants, including the HDSAs. Thank you, Chair.
Well, no, fine. We've got answers, but I don't think that they covered adequately the answers. CEO, with due respect, I think 3/4 of what you're answering is not things that I was talking to. My position is there. There's a lot that you should have done or come up with a recommendation in order to tell us that you don't have power. We know you don't have power. We accept the apology with the spirit of trying to transform. So we hope that your apology is accepted. Then we have to look forward after a month when you have to come back and present to accept.
I was just saying to the co-chair, we will accept the apology, but not with the boshness, but with the spirit in which it comes. On that basis, we'll accept the apology. But if it's the boshness, then we won't accept the apology. Mr. Kwena, is that right, ma'am? You agree with me? If it comes with a bigger boss of boshness, we won't accept that. Honorable members and House, you know, thank you very much for the presentation. Department of Energy, SAFIA, and NERSA. We are sitting with a challenge at the moment. You know, it is 5-1. BP is supposed to come up next, and their presentation is 15 to 20 minutes long. So we are sitting with a challenge. Some of us will have to go back to plenary because there is voting taking place in both houses. Some of us are debating in one house, and we are starting at 3:15 again. The chief whip has given us permission to hold this, but we have to come back at 3:15, 3:30. The NCOP will be back at 3:30. The NA will be at 3:15. So we want to ask your, I don't know, should we regulate it or should we just ask it or should we request? Okay, so you don't say we have to be autocratic. Fine. We'll ask from BP and the other presentation, Subtle, Engine, Petro, S, and Shell, if we can do all the presentations after we come back, because we will scrap the way forward for today. And we'll do that tomorrow. Can we do that? BP? The big boss of BP.
Your request is my command, sir. As you please.
Are you a boss?
They suggested that. But you are the boss here, so this is your world.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Is that the others, Sato? Okay. Engine? Okay. Petro SA? Oh, we don't negotiate with Petro SA, we just tell them. Yeah. and Shell. So that's fine.
We'll definitely comply, Chairperson. The only apology is that I have a doctor's appointment, so I will leave. But I've taken a backup, Buyiswa Mnonoliwane and Ivan Collier, my two esteemed colleagues, will take you through the Shell presentation, which is full of good news.
That's a boss, no? That's a big boss. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll break for lunch and we'll see each other at 3:15 and some of us at 3:30. Thank you very much.